Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. First today, we have a historical tidbit about the art of writing, specifically the goose feather quill. The art of writing, of literally setting pen to paper, is disappearing. Typewriters and now computers and smartphones have removed people from the tangible connection of expressing thoughts. Some schools no longer teach cursive writing. Why learn such an obsolete art in the modern world of keyboards? Let's look at the quill pen. The quill pen, however, imparts a certain elegance to writing. As an art form, the use of quill and calligraphy has not vanished entirely. In fact, many people still enjoy mastering its beauty. The use of bird feathers as pens dates to at least the 17th century. Fashioning a quill pen required a degree of craftsmanship, however, and writers started with the wing feather from a large bird, typically a goose, a swan, or possibly a turkey. Using a sharp knife, they shaved off most of the vane or plume to make the shaft easier to hold, and then stuck the quill, specifically the point of the feather, into hot sand and let it cool. The heat hardened the quill and made it last longer. And then using a penknife, they made a nib or a point by cutting the quill at about a 45-degree angle, trimming away the sides and cutting a lengthwise slit to the point. The slit helped the ink flow to the end of the nib. And then iron sulfate, tannic acid, water or wine, and gum arabic produced the rich black ink of the past. The tannic acid came from oak galls. These are bulbous growths on leaves and twigs that oak trees form in response to attacks from parasitic insects. Gum arabic kept the pigment suspended in the liquid and helped the ink flow from the pen. Writers dipped the quill pen into the ink, dabbed off the excess on the inside of the inkwell, and put their thoughts to paper. Writing in such a way allowed for three or four words to be scratched at a time before dipping the quill back into the ink. When finished, they sprinkled punce, a powder made from cuttlefish bone or sand, from a punce pot, onto the paper to help dry the ink. The leftover punce went back into the punce pot for reuse. Well, in the days before a postal service, correspondents entrusted their letters to third parties for delivery. To ensure the contents were private, they were folded over and pressed with molten wax onto the seam with an engraved seal. The seal authenticated the sender's identity, and sealing wax ensured that no one would open the letter without breaking the brittle substance. The invention of the steel nib in the early 19th century made the quill obsolete. The steel nub gave way to the fountain pen, and then the ballpoint pen, and the quill pen became almost, but not quite, obsolete. A few writers still enjoy writing with a goose quill, and they appear at every session of the U.S. Supreme Court. 20 white quills are placed on the counsel tables to become souvenirs, which are treasured from appearance at the Supreme Court by the lawyers who argue a case before the nation's highest body. And now some helpful information about the masks that we are asked to wear. Health officials now recommend that people cover their faces in public places. But are masks effective? Though different studies reach varying statistical conclusions, the overwhelming consensus is that they stem transmission. Jeremy Howard, an Australian data scientist who created the website maskforall.co, has identified 34 papers showing their effectiveness and none that show otherwise. Researchers from the National Institutes of Health performed a video experiment that offered a stark visual rendering of just how the masks work. They used a laser light to illuminate the shower of droplets emitted when someone speaks and demonstrated how nearly all of them were blocked by a mask. A team of scientists and academics from Europe and from California recently built a computer simulation which demonstrated that if 80% of the population wore masks, infection rates would plunge by more than 90%. That finding lines up with remarkably low infection rates in Asian countries where mask wearing is nearly universal, including Hong Kong and Taiwan, each of which has had fewer than 10 deaths despite high population density. The countries that flattened the curve used masks in public. And then we look at how masks have become a partisan symbol. If masks are so effective, why are some of us so resistant to wearing them? Given that we have no history of wearing, it's not surprising they seem alien. But the major reason is the degree to which the pandemic has been politicized. To supporters of President Trump, who has insisted on going maskless, reportedly because he thinks it would make him look weak to wear one, masks indicate a groundless fear of a virus whose dangers they believe are exaggerated in order to limit their freedom. When masks become a tribal marker, being asked to wear one is like asking a Red Sox fan to wear a Yankees jersey. According to psychologists in the journal Psychology Today, psychologists point to other conscious and unconscious factors. Some people may think that mask wearing would reveal feelings of vulnerability, which run counter to an evolutionary trait that predisposes us to disguise fear. Wearing a mask also conveys an acknowledgement that our old lives are gone, at least for now. "Put on a mask," said one clinical psychologist, "and you've suddenly admitted that this is the new normal." Now for some more COVID research, and that is COVID sniffing dogs. There may be soon a new tool for detecting coronavirus, one with a finely tuned nose and a wagging tail. Scientists at the University of Pennsylvania have launched a new trial to see if dogs, whose olfactory prowess is already used to detect drugs, explosives, and diseases such as malaria and cancer, can help sniff out the virus at airports and businesses and hospitals. The subjects are 8 Labrador retrievers, and they will have their noses exposed to saliva and to urine taken from COVID-19 patients. They will then be tested to see if they can discriminate between samples with the virus and samples without it. If the dogs can do that, the researchers will then see if they can identify the virus by sniffing infected people, including those who aren't even showing symptoms. A similar government-funded trial is underway in the United Kingdom, and they're using Cocker Spaniels and Labradors. Dogs have many more nasal receptors, and that allows them to process odors really at an incredibly fast rate, according to the project leader at the University of Pennsylvania. Their entire nose system is just built for this kind of work. This seems to be COVID-19 day, and I thought I would give you some additional information, specifically about how we re-enter normalcy. And this includes going to barbershops and hair salons, and it also, once in a while, includes going into a public bathroom. Let's take the first, barbershops and hair salons. Getting your hair cut by a professional remains relatively risky, said NPR.org, because it involves extended close contact and close breathing. Both the customer and the barber or stylist should be wearing masks, but a poorly fitted mask may be insufficient to prevent transmission if one of the parties is infected, yet asymptomatic. On the other hand, a 1 or 2 chair shop might be relatively low risk in an area with a low prevalence of COVID-19 infections. Look, in any case, for operations that are taking precautions, such as wearing protective gear, frequently sanitizing their hands, and eliminating in-house waits for customers. And even a barber should be all business. There should be no pauses for chatting and banter and neighborhood gossip. Everything should be all business, because the chatting and the banter increase everyone's potential exposure to swirling viral particles. And then, if we should need to use a public restroom, this is one of the biggest obstacles to reopening our life as normal. Whether you're at an office, a park, or an outdoor restaurant, having to go generally requires stepping into a tight, intimate, and potentially germ-infested space. The COVID-19 virus survives in fecal matter for a month. A month after a victim recovers and a high-pressure flush of an uncovered toilet can send a plume of potentially germ-laden water droplets 6 feet in all directions, including up and over a stall's wall. It's unproven that the disease can spread this way, and some experts recommend that people who stop at public restrooms focus more on distancing and wearing a mask. But try to touch faucets and doors only with a paper towel, not with your hand, and avoid electric hand dryers. They are the worst, because an electric hand dryer can blow germs across the entire room. Before going on to give you some information about the atmosphere, I want to thank This Week magazine for its helpful comments about the COVID-19 virus and the comments I have now about the atmosphere were from Smithsonian magazine of May this year, 2020. Thought you'd like to hear a little bit about jet streams and how they were discovered. Wiley Post is sometimes credited with discovering what he called the prevailing wind channel. Post noted strong currents at around 30,000 feet and use them for a record-setting flight from Los Angeles to Cleveland in 1935. But Japanese meteorologist Wasaburo Uishi had already described this effect, and his findings, which were originally published in the Esperanto language in the 1920s, were essentially ignored. The Japanese used Uishi's research During World War II, however, they sent balloon bombs, which carried by the jet stream, brought balloons to the west coast of the United States. If you're my age, you remember that. Today, airlines don't schedule flights based on the unpredictable jet stream, but dispatchers use it when they can. A February 2020 trip from New York to London used it to set a record time of 4 hours and 56 minutes. And then you might wonder, as some have, why aren't clouds affected by gravity? Well, the water or ice particles that make up clouds are too small. They're measured in microns, 1/1000th of a millimeter, to fall at any significant speed. So they can stay up in rising or turbulent air. But according to Ross Irwin, who's a geologist and chair of the National Air and Space Museum, if the clouds acquire too much moisture, then raindrops form and fall out. Clouds also tend to grow in upward moving air, and the updrafts in the atmosphere help to counteract the downward velocity of the particles and keep the clouds afloat. We're going to finish today with what I call items of note. For example, the death rate for 45 to 54-year-old white Americans with college degrees has fallen by 40% since the early 1990s. The rate has climbed 25% for whites in the same age range without degrees. A surge in suicides and deaths from drugs and alcohol among non-college whites is largely responsible for the disparity. And then SUVs and pickup trucks have become so big today that buyers are having trouble fitting them into home garages and into public parking spaces. In New York, parking lots are increasingly charging oversized fees for vehicles like Chevrolet Suburban and Fiat Chrysler's Ram. Some that already charge them are adopting supersized fees. And there's this. President Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner has sold his stake in Cadre, a real estate startup that invested in Opportunity Zone projects, which offer tax breaks that Kushner lobbied to create as part of the 2017 tax law. Kushner holding in Cadre was worth at least $25 million at the end of 2019, up from $5 million 3 years ago. And this from The Week magazine of March the 20th. And now we seem to be coming to the end of today's program. And I wanted to tell you about what's going to be ahead so that you can tune in and listen to me tell you that beer is not just a drink. I'm going to have my Bob Dylan concert fairly soon, which would be an introduction to his music. If you're unfamiliar with it, or if you are a Bob Dylan fan, you'll be pleased, because we go all the way from the beginning to the Nobel Prize ceremony when Patti Smith sang "A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall." And now I want you to take care. Be careful out there. Please tune in. We have a good program for you next time. And now I am going to be going out to find some more material for a little of this and a little of that. Goodbye.